If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, and welcome back to the Carol Markowitz Show on iHeartRadio. Mondays are the worst days for airing podcasts. I only found this out after I chose Mondays and Thursdays as the days my podcast would be on. But I've kept it on Mondays because this is a show about life and about making your life better. And I see every Monday as a mini New Year's Day where you can start over, try harder, be better. I started this year pledging to read more fiction because it keeps me from doom scrolling as much and it helps me sleep better and all of it, really. And I did it. For like 6 weeks, really into like the middle of February, I read a lot of fiction. And then work got busy, life got busy, and I kept carrying my fiction book around on flights, to the beach, to bed at night, but not actually reading it. So here I am, a Monday in the middle of April, starting my New Year's resolution again. I'm going to pledge to read a fiction book a month through the end of the year. That's not some wild goal. I should be able to meet it. I mean, I keep pledging to go to the gym, but that hasn't happened yet, so baby steps, people. If you have fiction book suggestions, send them my way. And if you're interested in restarting the New Year's resolution that you maybe fell off from doing, I'd love to hear about it at carolmarkowitzshow@gmail.com or hit me up on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. The best tip on how to improve your life is to take the steps you already know will improve your life and actually do them. So let's do this. Coming up next, an interview with Ilya Shapiro. Join us after the break.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Carol Markowitz Show on iHeartRadio. My guest today is Ilya Shapiro, Senior Fellow and Director of Constitutional Studies at the Manhattan Institute. He was previously Executive Director and Senior Lecturer at the Georgetown Center for the Constitution. His upcoming book, out September 10th, is called Lawless, The Miseducation of America's Elites, and is available for pre-order now. Hi, Ilya. So nice to have you on.
Good to be with you, but I thought you said in the show notes that you sent me that we were going to be doing this in Russian. Это не так?
No,
давай по-английски все-таки.
Давай по-русски. Я могу по-русски с тобой разговаривать.
And actually, now that you're in Florida, vamos a hacerlo en español. Es aún mejor así, no?
No. Let's not get crazy. I took 4 years of high school Spanish, and it turns out I don't know anything. Like, I thought I'd be ready for a Florida experience. I mean, it's not like we're, you know, in a full-on Spanish-speaking country, and no, I don't know anything, it turns out.
Well, we can get into this. You and I, of course, recently went to Israel, where the rule is you need to know 2 of 3 of Hebrew, English, and Russian, and so we've got that covered. Well, similarly, I think in Florida or certain parts, I think you need 2 of 3 of English, Spanish, and Russian. So
that's right. I did actually amazing in Israel. I went to Hebrew school from first grade through eighth grade. And it turns out that I retained, which really says a lot about, you know, the earlier you learn a language, the better, because I could totally hang in Israel. And I kept giving credit to my Israeli husband. I'd be like, oh, you know, yeah, I'm married to an Israeli. He didn't teach me anything. Like, it's not from him. It's from my early schooling.
Well, yeah. I grew up speaking Russian at home, but didn't have any Hebrew. This is why I still don't speak. I only speak easy languages. Like, I'm not about to pick up Arabic or Chinese, but I do all the romance ones because they're all variations on a theme. Because I went to a high school that had first a couple years of Latin, and then, you know, building up the French and Spanish and spending time there.
Right.
But I'm going to Hungary in a couple of weeks, but, you know, that's not related to anything. So I feel like a regular old American, as if I was, you know, only spoke one language. It's a little odd.
When I was on the way to Israel, I stopped in Warsaw for the day, so Poland, and my mom was like, do not speak Russian there. They do not like Russians. I'm like, yes, I heard. But although I heard a lot of people speaking Russian and Ukrainian, that was like really common in the street.
But what was amusing about that little stop off for you was, of course, you know, your last name is Polish and your first name is a Polish man's name. So do you have any giggles from the hotel check-in or
exactly.
What else happened?
They were like, you're Carol Markowitz? Like, yes, I am Carol Markowitz. It was, you know, my parents accidentally gave me a Polish man's name, which was the name, of course, of John Paul, Pope John Paul, his real name. He messed up all my Google results. It used to be you could Google just my first name and get me. But then after he passed, you know, he became number one Carol.
Wait. So you're saying that you were more famous? You were a more famous Carol before the Pope died?
I just think a lot of people didn't call him Carol on the internet, you know, and then when he died, everybody was like, they used his, you know, given name in the obituaries, whatever. It like fully messed me up. And there's also now.
No, what I'm getting from this is Carol thinks she's more famous than the Pope. Okay, got it. I'm running with that.
I'm just saying briefly, yeah. I was more famous than the Pope. And now there's a Latin American singer also named Carol with a K, and she totally messes up my results. But, you know, what are you going to do, Ilya, right?
Yeah.
Isn't there another Ilya? There is. There's Ilya.
I mean, there are many Ilyas, as you know. Ilya, especially for boys and
I mean,
boy.
In our world, isn't there another Ilya in our world? Ilya.
There's another
Soman,
law professor,
right?
Ilya Soman.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Right. You guys...
Yeah, he's the smart one. I'm the funny one. That's the division of labor. Also, we're
you
nothing.
You should go with the handsome one. The handsome.
We're nothing
who cares
alike.
How funny.
Well, we can also do the short and tall and all this, but the you totally broke my train of thought. It left the station and got derailed.
Lots of Ilyas,
mostly hockey players, but the anyway.
All right. We'll come back to your hilarious joke since you're
it's
the funnier.
Hilarious. Yes. Well, actually, how I make my living is that I occupy that thin sliver in the Venn diagram. So there's a lot of people who know more about constitutional law than I do. Hell of a lot of people who are funnier than I am, but I occupy that thin sliver where those overlap. It's a living.
Yeah, I mean that's the way to go about it. I think you represent that tiny little Gaza Strip.
Okay, you can say that. I couldn't possibly comment.
Anything goes on the Carol Markowitz show. So you and I were in Israel. It was a great time, a sad time, a difficult time. It was a lot of things.
It was intense.
Right, but I think that's what Israel is. Right, it's like. They have a lot going on, good and bad, all the time. I hadn't been
since 2007, so it's different country, even without October 7th.
Right.
I wouldn't say that it's always intense. I mean, these are real people living real lives, having normal ups and downs, and apparently happier than almost anybody in the world.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
And with a higher birth rate than anybody else in the industrialized mm-hmm. world. So they're doing something right. And even though they're, smaller than New Jersey and with enemies armed to the teeth around everywhere, it's and internal divisions that sometimes make the divisions with its external enemies seem like, powder puff football. So
right.
just a society of contrast, such richness in such a small place. I enjoyed it tremendously and mm-hmm. I'm still processing it. Still haven't. I posted on my Substack, Shapiro's Gavel, while I was there, kind of various kinds of impressions. I still haven't written my piece, what I learned about in my trip to Israel that I'm going to write for the City Journal. Just remarkable stuff, but whether geopolitically or sociologically mm-hmm. or anything, and just the way that we were able to be based in a nice hotel in Tel Aviv and go to the farthest north, 10 mm-hmm. feet from the Lebanese border. And down south, less than half a mile or so from Gaza and in mm-hmm. the massacre sites and all that. And then still, return home for happy hour to the hotel. Just,
right.
Just amazing.
Yeah. I feel like that's kind of always been my feeling on Israel. It's got just so much going on and it is a real place. It's super a real place, which I think gets lost in all the news of it because you see it as this, historic country. And when you walk around Jerusalem, you do feel like you're like in a storybook or you're, in maybe possibly the most famous storybook of all time, the Bible. I think that you feel that, sense of history there, but then you're in Tel Aviv and you're at like the hottest restaurant and you're eating this unbelievable, innovative food. It's a country of contradictions. I think that gets used a lot. And I really felt that this time more than on previous visits, because we got to see so many different facets of it. I've been thinking about it so much. When I landed, I don't know if the guy said this to you, but like when I landed, the last time I was there was 2011. And the guy, the border, agent in Israel is like, why has it been so long? Like, why haven't you been back? And I start telling him like, no, I had a wedding. We were supposed to come in 2020. We were supposed to come last year. It didn't work out. Whatever. He doesn't really care. But if the sense of like, why have you been away so long was...
I had an interesting exchange with the customs agent as well. She said, what are you here for? And I said, well, it's like a media influencers tour. And she kind of smiled and nodded because a lot of people are going through on that sort mm-hmm. of thing. And she said, oh, so where are you going? And I said, well, everywhere, you know, to the north, to the south, to Jerusalem. And she's like, oh, well, we're up north. And I'm like, I'm not sure. Do you want to see my itinerary? And she's like, no. I just want you to be safe because there's, you know, dangers up there. And remember, that was the day that we had to put on helmets and flak jackets. And there were missiles that morning. And it was touch and go whether we could make it there. So she was, you know, just caring about the media influencer safety, which was nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I there's so much of that. I just feel like it's very homey and it's a really great country. I think, you know, whether you're Jewish or not, I think visiting Israel is really an amazing trip. And I highly recommend people listening make that trip. I know it seems like it's so dangerous, but it's really not. When you're there, you feel complete safety, complete security. And it's a really
wonderful place. Yeah, anywhere you go, whatever kind of tour group you go with, you know, the army briefs them and they're not going to take you to places, you know, like we had to change our plans in Jerusalem because of the, you know, biggest red alert in decades over the first Friday of Ramadan since October 7th. So, I mean, it's you're probably in more danger, you know, getting in a car and driving around DC than going to Israel.
So, you know, you've had an exciting couple of years.
It's like the Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times.
You have lived in interesting times. You were very famously canceled.
No. They tried to cancel me. You cancel me, I cancel you.
Yeah, they can't cancel Ilya. Okay, they tried to cancel you. But, you know, one of the themes on this show is like that some of your hardest times can obviously lead to some of your best times. And you do seem like you won. You're thriving and you're doing amazing. But what was it like in the moment? Like, did you feel like you would recover? Did you feel like you'd come back stronger than ever? Or were there dark times?
Well, I
or do you want to tell us about it a little bit? Like just, you know, just in passing, it doesn't have to be the details.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I sketched this out on my Substack, Shapiro's Gavel, come subscribe free or paid or whatever. And
pay the man.
What's that?
I said, pay the man, do
that's
it.
That's right. Uh-huh. And in more detail in my book that you graciously plugged at the outset, Lawless, it's coming out in September. So I had this, when Justice Breyer retired, I was doing media all day because that's what I do. That's my area of expertise. I'd written a book about Supreme Court politics and judicial nominations. And I was getting more and more upset about President Biden keeping to his campaign pledge to appoint a black woman, that is to restrict his candidates by race and sex. And so after, you know, doing all this stuff all day, and I was in Austin, Texas, at a friend's celebratory dinner, came back to my hotel and, you know, not a best practice, doom scrolling late at night in your hotel room, getting more and more upset on Twitter. And I fired off a hot take saying that, you know, if I were a Democratic president, I would pick and I chose the chief judge of the D.C. Circuit, very prestigious court, very smart man, Sri Srinivasan, great judge, was a contender for previous vacancies. But this time, because of the hierarchy of intersectionality, he's excluded, even though he's an Indian American and an immigrant, checks off lots of boxes, but not these ones. So
because
I said,
Biden had promised that it would be a black woman.
That's
basically,
right. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Mm-hmm. And I said, so, you know, he's disqualified. So we will end up with a lesser black woman. And it's really those three words. I meant less qualified, you know, by basic operation of logic. If I'm saying this person is the best, everyone else in the entire universe is worse or lesser, less qualified, whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I fired that off, went to sleep, woke up the next morning, checked my Twitter feed and all hell had broken loose. And people were trying to get me fired. Mind you, because I was moving to Georgetown, I had been at Cato for nearly 15 years, the Cato Institute, a leading libertarian think tank. If I had still just been at Cato, you know,
they
people
couldn't
would have
do anything.
You know, more right-wing nonsense, whatever, blah, blah. But because I was trying to intrude on a progressive bastion, Georgetown Law School, people were trying to get me canceled and fired and all the rest of it. And so began my 4 days of hell. It was really the most unpleasant period of my life, other than when my mom died when I was in college. I say it's the second most unpleasant period of my life. You know, I couldn't sleep. There were gastrointestinal issues. My wife was upset. My kids could tell that mommy and daddy weren't happy. You know, it felt like everything I had worked towards in my entire life, the sacrifices that my parents had made in coming over from the Soviet Union, everything was crumbling because of a badly worded tweet. And luckily, I have a big enough network of PR professionals and crisis management and media personalities that could platform me and my story that I survived those first 4 days. At which point the dean, who is, you know, no profile in courage throughout this whole thing, decided that I would indeed be onboarded, because it was 4 days later that I was supposed to start the new job as as a director of the Center for the Constitution, which is an important center at Georgetown, as we've learned, because the rest of the law school is a center against the Constitution. So right. I was onboarded, but immediately suspended, placed on administrative leave with pay. The reason that why they kept paying me was so I would have less of a lawsuit later on. And so began, after the 4 days of hell, what I refer to as 4 months of purgatory. Initially, I was taking it seriously. I was prepping with my lawyer, you know, the interview with the DEI office and HR and all this stuff. But then it became clear that it was just such a farce. And as time went on, I went back to commenting on the court and commenting on judicial politics and all the rest of it. And it took them more than 4 months to figure out whether my tweet violated policies on harassment and discrimination. And ultimately, a junior associate at the high-paid law firm, Wilmer Hale, that they hired to advise them on this, how many millions of dollars they expended on this is really funny, discovered that I was not yet an employee when I tweeted, and so it wasn't covered by these policies. And so I celebrated that technical victory, but then I read the longer report from the DEI office, which at Georgetown is called the Office of Institutional Diversity, Equity, and Affirmative Action, IDEA. And it became clear that it would be untenable for me to stay. Not just me, but anybody who they wrote, anybody who says or writes something that offends someone would effectively be creating a hostile educational environment. So I couldn't do the job that I was hired to do. As one does, I probably did my best lawyering of my life in putting together this resignation letter, and then published it in the Wall Street Journal opinion page. And then the next day announced, as one does, announced my move to the Manhattan Institute on Tucker Carlson show on Fox. So that was, yes, an interesting period in my life.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back on the Carol Markowitz Show.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court, and what's next. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you feel fully victorious, like, doing that? I must have felt so good. They went through four months. They tried to kill you. They didn't. And it must have felt amazing to say, now I don't want to be with you. Now I'm not
exactly
joining this group is
what I'm saying. I mean, I feel a little sheepish in front of the rest of Georgetown's faculty and staff because they started implementing extra diversity trainings
because of me.
So they have to deal with all this crap.
I felt
free for the first time. Nothing was as bad as those first 4 days, but I just felt free and liberated. And especially since I had the job offer in hand, the Raihan Salam, the president of MI, and Alana Golan, who was the executive VP, over the course of a weekend, put together an offer for me, which was, you know, very comforting because you know, even though theoretically I knew I would have job opportunities and whatnot, it was nice when I was resigning to actually have the next thing in place.
Absolutely.
For, you know, family safety and all the rest of it. And for the first time in over 4 months, I was in control of the media cycle. And Georgetown could not respond because they're a big institution. They can't move that nimbly, and they don't have a coordinated message. And so I was doing all of these, you know, radio and TV and whatever for 2 weeks. Right at the end of the Supreme Court term, when I was also commenting on the big explosive cases in 2022, and then I went on a vacation with my family. So it was
It
felt liberating. In fact, that first day, the day I resigned, that evening I went to a reception at the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation Museum in D.C., which everyone should check out when you come to D.C. Great museum. They had these name tags made up. And of course, mine said Georgetown because when I'd registered, I was Georgetown. Uh-huh. So I crossed that out and I wrote in Freeman.
Amazing.
It was great.
Do you feel like you've made it?
It depends how you define those terms. I mean, people ask whether having gone through all of that and 2 years later, you know, having a book deal, being elevated in the type of speeches I'm invited to give, or this media influencers trip to Israel and opportunities that I wouldn't necessarily have had before, even if I was, you know, respected in my field, was it all worth it? And I'll say this, I'm definitely better off in terms of, you know, career, profession, brand. Does that end justify the means that those 4 days of hell? I'm not sure how to answer that. That's kind of a question for I'm not a psychologist. You know, I can tell a man from a woman without being a biologist. Well. But to answer that question, I think I need, I don't know. But I definitely am career-wise, better off. And I'm sort of bulletproof with respect to cancel culture. It's like, what, you're going to try to cancel me again? Like, I don't care. I'm at age 46, I've achieved the DGAF part of my life. So that's
amazing.
So that's great.
Yeah. So does the whole cancellation thing or the attempted cancellation, does it make you, I don't know, does it make you worry about societal, you know, pressures? Like, not everybody can be Ilya Shapiro. Not everyone could withstand something like that. Would you say that's one of our largest challenges, you know, as a culture?
You know, I've gotten awards for that experience. And it's funny. All I did was like nothing, like not quit for 4 months. And then I quit. Uh-huh. And that's it. It's kind
You're
of a low
hero.
Bar. It's a low bar for showing courage these days, I guess. Not like the stuff going on in Israel as I'm lifting up the dog tag for the hostages that we got.
What would you say is our largest cultural issue or societal?
Well, it's related to that. It's kind of the divisions that we have in our country, despite the wealth and technological advancement and the fact that we are living more comfortably than you know, any society in history. Regardless of what percentile of socioeconomic advancement in this country you are, it's better than any time in any society in history. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, we're tremendously divided. And I don't just mean kind of what shows up at the polls. Because I don't think Americans are as polarized in that way as Congress is because of gerrymandering and because of the dynamics of the parties and campaign finance and other things. But we are physically separated. There are many fewer competitive jurisdictions in the country anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, Ronald Reagan had a landslide in 1984, you know, a convincing win in 1980. And there were, you know, more landslide counties in 2020.
Interesting.
It's just that people are less likely to have neighbors that are different from them. In
is that
various
bad?
Ways.
Is that, I don't know. I almost like, as somebody who's living for the very first time in a place where I'm the majority, it's very, I like it.
That's liberating as well. That's only part. It's not just, you know, how you vote. It's different than you in all sorts. You know, you're reading, what you read, what coffee you buy, whether you buy coffee, you know, beer, wine, all these different kind of cultural, right, economic signifiers are more sorted than they've been. But mm-hmm. then you get the kind of the online part, because we all live our lives so much online these yeah. days. I remember when I was in grad school at the London School of Economics, I took a year between college and law school to kind of broaden my horizons and deepen my knowledge about various things. And we read a book when we were studying nationalism, read a book by Benedict Anderson called Imagined Communities. His definition of nationalism before this kind of current populist nationalist mm-hmm. moment would have, you know, 25 years ago. You define a nation by who you imagine that you're sort of a part of. Well, in the digital world, you could be part of, you know, with lots of people and never encounter people outside of your bubble of whatever right. kind that might be. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be politics. And so there's this long tail of people getting sorted in various ways. And it's good in terms of individualism, but mm-hmm. it's not good in terms of a sense of community or nation or cohesion. And so we face all of that. Again, I'm, you know, in most of the time on most things, like Brett Kavanaugh at his confirmation hearings, I live on the Sunrise side of the mountain.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you like beer.
I'm gonna go a little personal on you, Carol. I am a gout patient, and we can talk about this medieval disease.
What? But
because of that, I can't drink beer anymore. It's like one of the contraindicated things. So I've got, even, you know, as you get up in age anyway, you switch more to wine or cocktails or whatever. But mm-hmm. you know, I hardly ever drink beer anymore.
Interesting. Okay.
So I do like beer, but I don't drink it anymore. I do have a koozie with. Justice Kavanaugh's face on it and says, I like beer. It's one of my favorite koozies. But yeah, I don't recommend getting gout. It's probably the most painful, non-life-threatening thing that you can have, short of, you know, childbirth or something like that. So Sunrise side of the mountain. But for certain things, whether the state of our political institutions, whether state of higher education, certainly, it's hard to be optimistic. I may be less pessimistic mm-hmm. than I was 2 years ago when I quit Georgetown, because things kind of after COVID that addled so many brains were sort of normalizing right. in a certain way. But there are some things that give me pause.
Mm. That's very interesting. Because I have gone sort of the other way, and I love arguing with you. We argued on a stage recently. I love being like, I disagree, Ilya. But you know, have you ever lived anywhere?
It's America. You're free to be wrong in this
country.
That's
right. That's right. You are free to be wrong, Ilya. Have you ever lived anywhere where you were the majority ideologically, or that you were at least like leaning towards somewhere that most people agreed with you? It really is dazzling. I can't say enough about it. And it's not crazy to want to live around people yeah. that do agree with you. I get the online part, the segregation. I used to love commenting on like feminist blogs, like back in the day, of course, until I got banned, from their comment section.
So someone was wrong on the internet and you had to fix that?
I used to love arguing. I used to love arguing with strangers on the internet, and I never argue anymore. And it is a little depressing, because I think, you know, debating, I love all that. But you don't get that anymore. You get, drive-by insults, and then I block, and then I never hear from them again. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. You know, part of these interesting times that I've lived is, you know, before my Georgetown experience, I ran for school board mm-hmm. In Falls Church City, Virginia in the fall of 2021. Falls Church is a small town. It's even called the Little City, 15,000 residents, 10,000 voters. And during COVID, people were really upset, like they were with school boards across the country,
right,
about COVID policy, about when the schools were closed here. Despite a popular survey to the contrary, the school board voted unanimously to rename Thomas Jefferson Elementary and George Mason High. So there's a lot of discontent. And I thought, well, you know, who's going to step up and fix this? And not many people were. So I said, well, I guess I have to run. And, broke fundraising records. Again, mm-hmm. launched my local school board campaign with a Wall Street Journal op-ed, as one does. And
right.
Started being attacked by the local weekly paper, who's run by a Lyndon LaRouche acolyte. It's kind of amusing local politics here. Falls Church is the epitome of limousine liberal. It
right.
went for Biden by more than Alexandria, Virginia, by more
wow.
than Charlottesville. I mean, just, I think it was like 81 or 82%.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this is the richest town in America. Not because we have billionaires, but we don't have poor people here. It's all lawyers and lobbyists and other professionals.
Right.
So anyway, an interesting political dynamic. So I had that experience, which...
And that sucks, you know, no? That doesn't suck?
It does. It does. Although, because it's so local and small,
yeah.
The school board turned over... So there were four seats open. None of the incumbents ran for re-election, which tells you something. And seven of us ran for these four seats.
Mm-hmm.
The reformers, we did not win.
Right.
But the four that went on were definitely better than the four that left. And the school board is now in control. Even when I disagree with their decisions, they're not just laying down for the superintendent, mm-hmm. which was the case before. He hates me, by the way. And he knows I can summon, flying monkeys to attack him whenever he does something silly. But Kristen and I, my wife and I, we now exercise soft power behind the scenes. I play tennis with the chairman of the school board. And
pulling the strings
She checks with some of the other people. They care about what they know that there's a lot of people that
right.
just don't have time to pay attention to it. But they know that, they want to be, rational and not be made into national news stories like our neighbors in Arlington and Fairfax,
right.
which regularly do for all sorts. We don't have that kind of craziness here. It's
yeah.
much more small and nimble. Like we can meet with our kids' principal whenever we want kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very, it's still high quality. It's still not, our kids are small so far, second grade and kindergarten. We'll see how it goes as things go on. But, and then we have baby twins as well. So that's the other thing that happened during this whole crazy period. We had our cancellation babies. So anyway, it has been interesting times. And that's brought me here to this, which reminds me of one of my favorite songs. I don't know if you're into country music, Carol, but
I love country music.
Good,
it's my favorite right now. Yeah.
Good. Well, the artist who used to be Hootie of Hootie and the Blowfish, Darius Rucker,
mm-hmm.
is a big country star, and he wrote this song called "This" about it sets the scene. It's raining outside. He's sitting on the couch with his wife watching a movie or something. His baby girl's sleeping in the next room. And he thinks he gets kind of nostalgic or sentimental about all the doors that closed in his life, the colleges that rejected him, the girls that dumped him, all these wrong decisions that he made. But that ultimately brought him here to this, which was contentment. And so, I've had this tumultuous period, but all of a sudden, this only child Soviet emigre is
poor
here
kids,
with a large family
yeah.
with this, mm-hmm. We joke that we're landed gentry. We have this, it's not a McMansion. Our neighbors have bigger house than we do, but it's like this old house on a hill with a circular driveway and we have a pool. And my in-laws built their house on our property. So we have this multi-generational compound.
Amazing.
I mean, it is fit. The only thing wrong with it is that it's not in Florida, but
I
short
know.
Of that, it's great.
If we could figure out a way to move it to Florida, I think
we'd
really
costs,
have it all.
The transactions costs are just too high. We have such a great setup. We have an au pair now.
Mm-hmm.
We built a little, we knocked down our garage and put up a space for someone to live and kind of a guest bedroom situation with a gym that I got. So
we're gonna come visit.
Here. Yeah,
yeah,
you should.
You will. So end here with your best tip for my listeners on how they can improve their lives and be, more like Ilya Shapiro.
It's all what I've learned. First of all, it depends who's asking. If it's someone, you know, just graduating college or a student, it's different. And the wrong advice is to say, oh, just follow your passion or something. I mean, kids any days don't really know what their passion is.
Right.
It's sort of, or whether you're someone talking to someone mid-career, and I wouldn't fathom to give someone advice who's older than me. But look, it's what I've learned in reading, especially psychologists, like Jonathan Haidt is very popular these days. Everyone should go read what he's writing. But agency is so important. That is feeling like you're in control of your life, all different aspects of your life. People are what makes people unhappy. You know, once you kind of satisfy the basic needs, you know, you're not in danger of being homeless or starving or things like this. You have, you know, if your kid gets sick, you can take him to the doctor. These basic things. After that, it's just it's not, you know, you work too much and therefore you're unhappy. Or people are unhappy when they feel like they aren't in control of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so my only advice is figure out a way to both personally and professionally feel like you're the master of your fate.
You run the show.
Right. Yeah. And that doesn't necessarily mean go start your own business. Right. I'm not entrepreneurial in that sense. I am entrepreneurial, I feel, in terms of like ideas and, and figuring out, identifying opportunities. And, you know, I thought I would, you know, go into Georgetown, I would be teaching this and I would be writing about originalism and doing this.
Right.
And God plans and man plans and God laughs.
Yeah.
So you just identify opportunities and try to do that. But I'm not going to sit here and pretend that you asked me, you know, whether I've made it. You know, I don't feel like I've figured it out necessarily, but I'm doing my best. My hardest job is as a dad. I just took my older boys on spring break to Arizona and California. We had a fun and interesting time. Of course, now I feel like I need a real vacation. again, get to a place where, you know, whether you're working in a giant corporation, a small business for yourself, or whatever it is, you know, starting a business with your husband or wife or whatever it is, that's what will make you, give you a sense of accomplishment and mission and all of that sort of thing.
Thank you so much for coming on. He is Ilya Shapiro. His book is Lawless, The Miseducation of America's Elites. Buy it now. Pre-order it wherever books are sold. Thank you so much, Ilya.
Очень приятно, Carol.
Очень-очень приятно.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Carol Markowitz Show. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.